Hey, what's up? This is another episode of the Butcher Bordello of Blood podcast. As always, I'm Zach Butcher, and I got Blade Brown. And this week we have Ed. Hello, Ed. How are you?
Hello. How are you guys?
Excited. Happy to have you on here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Of course. So what we normally do is we try to talk to the guest about their own history with horror and then being an artist, and then kind of go into the annoying, like, fandom questions. Are you cool with starting it like that?
Sure, absolutely.
Okay.
Whatever you guys want.
So what is your earliest memory of horror? Is it a movie, TV, you know, EC Comics, something like that?
I think the earliest thing of horror for me was I was watching a movie, and I don't even know what movie it is, and I haven't really done the work to, like, go back and research it, but it was like a black and white movie, and I could definitely find it, but it's kind of one of those things where I'm like, I don't want to ruin it. I like the mental, because, you know, it's going to probably look really cheesy. But it was like this movie where, like, this guy and this woman were, like, making out in the forest. And then this blob, but it wasn't, like, gelatinous, like, you know, like the blob.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it was like a creature, like this thing that kind of almost like a slug, but with, like, with skin, like lizard skin. And it just came and the guy ran away, and for some reason the woman didn't move, and it slowly consumed this woman. And it was just like the woman was being, like, eaten alive. And it was just, as a kid, you know, probably, like, you know, really young. I don't remember when it was. It was just really horrifying and kind of just, like, stuck with me. And not in a fun way. Like, it was something that really bothered me for a while. So that's probably the earliest memory of horror. But mostly, I mean, you know, I guess I'm a horror filmmaker now, and I'm very proud to be in this genre, and I love it, but I never was, like, a horror enthusiast in my early years. And I'm not even really a horror enthusiast now. Like, I dread watching horror movies that people say, oh my God, it's actually really scary. Like, I don't like watching those movies, but I like horror movies. I think that they're really underappreciated, but it took me a while to kind of get into, like, build a nerve up to actually, like, watch horror movies on a regular basis.
Yeah. So I feel like you've done quite a few things as far as being an artist. What was your earliest memory of, like, oh, you know, I filmed this, or I wrote this, or I helped work on this idea, or whatever. Yeah. You're like, what was number one for you?
I was always really, like a visual thinker, you know. And I remember, like, listening to my sister's Saturday Night Fever soundtrack.
Yeah.
And there was one where it's like something on Calypso Mountain or something. It's like a classical song that kind of made disco.
Yeah.
And I remember, like, just imagining, like, a music video, like a cartoon, or I don't know, it was like somebody going up this mountain, and it was, like, really exciting to, like, match. And this was before videos. This was, like, you know, like Saturday Night Fever was 77, I think. So somewhere around there. And I remember just, like, just laying in my bed and just, like, imagining it. I just taking this little ride, and I would listen to it every once in a while and kind of update the video, the music video. So that's kind of the earliest, like, at least where I connected, like, music to visuals, you know, audio to my own visuals. But Star Wars came out and really made me, like, interested in, like, the mechanics of filmmaking, you know, like, just how they made the special effects and all that stuff. And then at that, you know, after that, I remember I would do these little storyboards for, I did this one movie called, you know, UFO Invasion. And it was just like a very simple storyboard. Like, and I was going to, my dad had a Super 8 camera and I was going to shoot it, but this was like, you know, it was like, even Super 8 was beyond my, you know, like my financial capacity. And so basically I would just have fun kind of making the movie in my head and kind of storyboarding out and writing, like, a little mini script, and then kind of imagining my sister, who was, you know, older than me, and her friends, like, acting in it. And you know, and that was it. But, you know, I didn't know how to edit Super 8 film or, you know, it was kind of like just, you know, I was kind of doing like the first kind of steps of filmmaking, but didn't have the knowledge of how to actually, you know, put it on screen, you know?
Yeah. So when did those two like officially combine? When were you like, okay, horror is what I want to work on? Like,
I never made that decision. Like I was more like a Spielberg Lucas kind of, you know, guy.
I still love Star Wars. You're preaching to the choir on that. Yeah. Absolutely.
And I like Star Wars a little bit too, as you can see. You know, I was more of like, you know, especially in my teenage years, like Brian De Palma and I didn't even discover Scorsese until I was like in film school. And then later on Spike Lee, and you know, it was like this very indie kind of, you know, idea, but I never thought that I would make a horror movie. Like I was more like a action comedy kind of guy.
Yeah.
And that's why I love like Evil Dead 2, so much, because like, that was the first time where like, you know, and I remember my friend Neil Fredericks, who actually was the DP on Blair Witch and passed years ago, unfortunately, but he introduced me to like he was a real horror geek. So he introduced me to like, you know, all the trauma films and Evil Dead 2.
Yeah.
And, you know, he introduced me to Sam Raimi and like, you know, Army of Darkness afterwards. And then, you know, just all the Sam Raimi films that came after. And then, you know, Pumpkinhead and kind of the, you know, not the slasher. I never liked the slasher movies, but more of the monster movies and, you know, some of the, you know, the George Romero zombie movies. And so, but it wasn't until, so I didn't really think of being a horror filmmaker until really Blair Witch, you know, and even then it was just like, you know, it happened to be that we were talking about horror movies and my partner and I, Dan Myrick, were like, you know, what would scare people now? And we came up, you know, we thought about like the documentary, fake documentaries. And that's kind of how Blair Witch was born. But I think both of us, Dan and I, were like more comedy. Like we were just always like kind of, you know, making each other laugh and just acting stupid. And, and then, you know, once Blair Witch came out, then now you're a horror filmmaker. And again, you know, I'm very happy to be a horror filmmaker. And I had to kind of learn to appreciate the, you know, the art and just like the challenges of horror filmmaking, you know?
Yeah. Okay. With like what I understood it was you guys had some form of an idea for something that would be like Blair Witch, like into the early 90s into the mid 90s. And then it started coming together a couple years after that. Did you have anything that was like inspiring you? Cause I, you know, like everyone always talks about like Blair Witch being like the first like real found footage type deal. And like, you know, it really like laid this groundwork, but then, you know, in the past 10 years, let's say, people were like, oh, well, Ghostwatch did it in the early 90s. But I didn't know what the fuck Ghostwatch was until well after Blair Witch. Like,
yeah. And, you know, Ghostwatch was something that we were educated on later on.
Of course.
Cannibal Holocaust was something that came later.
There's one. Last Broadcast is one I see compared a lot. They came out very close to.
Yeah. Last Broadcast was the one that we were mostly aware of while we were making the movie. And it was like, and I know that, you know, there's been some controversy where like, you know, one of those guys, or I don't know, I try not to, you know, kind of dwell on that because it's just a pain in the ass, but I'm totally, you know, totally open to talking about it. But, you know, we shot Blair Witch in 97, and then early 98, I moved to Orlando and was literally like sleeping on Dan's floor in his apartment and editing the movie and just kind of getting ready to, we were shooting like phase two stuff, which was like the documentary stuff for Blair Witch that never made it into the movie, but we used in Curse of the Blair Witch. And, And I remember Mike Minella, who was another producer on Blair Witch, he worked at the Enzian Theater. He was like very well connected in like the indie world. And Enzian is like the indie film, you know, like the art house theater.
Okay, in cool. Yeah.
Yeah. And very supportive of filmmakers. It's the first time we screened Blair Witch there. He was like, dudes, have you guys heard about this Last Broadcast thing? And we were like, what? And he was like, there's this movie that I saw on IndieWire or whatever, and it looks like the Blair Witch Project. And we were like, Dan and I were like, God damn it. Because we came up with the idea in the early 90s, and
right.
We sat on it until 96 when Greg Hale got involved, and then he started kind of kicking our asses to get it done. And we were like, gee, and when, you know, we'd gone through that before, you know, we'd like, man, there's these ideas, and then a movie comes out, and you're like, shit. And we were like, holy shit, if we had just done this a year earlier, we would have beat them to the market. So we watched the trailer, and it was like, it was Blair Witch, man. It was, obviously it wasn't the same as, you know, it was different premise or whatever, but the whole shaky kind of, you know, video, like a documentary of, you know, something fucked up happening in the woods. And, but the movie wasn't ready yet. Like they hadn't released the movie or anything. And we were just like, Jesus Christ. Like, you know, and what are you going to do? Like, you got to keep making Blair Witch. And then it wasn't until like September, like right around the time that we entered Sundance, they actually sent a copy of Last Broadcast to the Enzian because they were going to, that was going to be part of their distribution.
Okay.
And you know, those guys like were definitely cutting edge. Like they were the first ones to like, I think do like a, you know, like over the internet kind of distribution model where like they would, you know, they, you know, like digital distribution, you know, and the Enzian was one of the few theaters that had like a really good digital projector, you know. But so they were able to show the movie there. So Mike got a copy of it. He was like, hey, do you guys want to come and see this, you know, Last Broadcast? So we checked it out and, you know, we were, again, super nervous because, you know, it's like, again, you know, you don't know what you're going to see. But by this time we had already edited Blair Witch and we were like about, like I said, we were like a couple weeks away from entering Sundance. And we watched the movie and we realized like, yeah, it's pretty cool and it's very similar, has similar beats, but it's not the Blair Witch Project.
Yeah.
And at that point we were like not so worried and, you know, we felt like both movies could have like, you know, a piece of the marketplace. It was, you know, there, and it was kind of a coincidence that these two things kind of came up at the same time. But you know, so that was the Last Broadcast. And then, you know, we got into Sundance and, I don't think they didn't get into Sundance. And then and the first time we met them was at Sundance. And, you know, there was some bad blood. Like when we sold the movie, there was, you know, I think they felt that like we had ripped them off in one way or another, but to be honest with you, like if you look at the timelines, there's like no way we could have, you know, ripped them off. So, you know, anyway, that's the story of Last Broadcast. But honestly, like, look, I mean, and I'm not, you know, saying anything about, you know, which film is better or whatever.
But, oh, yeah, no.
You know, it's not, they're both like kind of unique in their own way. But I mean, you know, if you look at Last Broadcast, they went to market first. And they didn't really have much success until Blair Witch came out. And then they were like, on the video cover was like, you know, preceded Blair Witch, or I mean, they used Blair Witch to sell that movie. So, you know, I think that it was like a, you know, obviously they didn't make, it wasn't as successful as Blair Witch, but I think that even though they, you know, they might, and again, I don't know how they feel. I'm not sure if there's any animosity still. I'm not sure. I don't talk to those guys. You know, we felt that like, well, you know, it seems like if without Blair Witch, this would have not even been distributed. So, you know, we kind of both won. But yeah, unfortunately, I mean, you know, look, I know how they feel and I know how they feel, you know, but again, it's just like, that's just the way it is. You know, it was two different, it was similar ideas, but, you know, two different types of execution, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, you know, I don't know if you felt this way, but neither of us were asking in like a shitty way. It was just like,
no, I wouldn't be as open if you guys were like trying to prod or whatever. Okay. But I mean, you know, I mean, like for me, it's like, you know, I'm just trying to be as honest as possible. And I'm trying to be like, you know, I feel bad that those guys felt that way, or I don't know if they still feel that way, but to be honest, you know, honestly, like if you really look at the, you know, at the timeline of like production and when we were casting, you know, we had this idea, you know, in the early 90s, you know,
right,
in Europe, you know, so, you know, we definitely didn't rip them off. It just didn't happen that way.
So with like you and Dan as a duo, with like Haxon as a team, you know, you guys like being friends with the Video Palace dudes and everyone, you know, like how do you guys work creatively? And like, not like in a jerk off way, but you know, you guys are always kind of doing something ahead of the curve, or you're always doing things that are innovative, or it's like right place, right time. You know, did one of you just like sell your souls and like it's just worked like that? Like, what, how do you keep doing this?
Well, I mean, you know, I don't know if I totally agree with that. Like, I think we haven't had really a big hit since Blair. And
okay.
And, you know, we've had, I'm proud of the work I've done, you know, since Blair Witch. And, you know, and again, it's like, I'm very happy, you know, like I'm blessed that you guys are interested in talking to me, you know, and people like you are still, you know, fans of the movie and still want to know stuff about it or whatever. And are interested in our careers and stuff. And I owe like this great career that I've had to people, you know, to you guys and everybody that, you know, buys the stuff and watches the TV shows that I do and stuff. But I mean, you know, for us really as a team, we're always, you know, like, you know, the idea of just trying to do something new, trying to do something unique, you know, it's like, you know, that's kind of like the fun of filmmaking for us.
Yeah.
You know, it's like we're and you know, and that just kind of leads to, you know, just kind of doing stuff. And again, it's taking chances, and a lot of times you fall flat on your face and you're like, you know, whatever, and it's painful or whatever. But you know, trying something new, trying to kind of, you know, not copy people and kind of, you know, do unique stuff. And, you know, but so that's kind of what we do. But, you know, again, like, you know, I've had a really good, you know, run television career, you know, directing TV shows. And, you know, and sometimes you get into these situations where you're like, you know, you're doing a show that's been on forever and, you know, what can I add to it? And, you know, and sometimes, you know, like I felt like early on, like a little bit of like I was selling my soul, but it seems like every time, you know, I go to a set, even if it's a show that I'm like, I've never watched this show. I'm never going to watch this show. It's always so rewarding. Like there's only been a few times that I've done, you know, TV where like, it was just like, man, that was a drag, you know?
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's just like the crews are so great. The energy is great. It's great meeting new actors and DPs and you're always learning stuff. And there's so much talent out there that even on a show where you're like, man, it seems like they would be phoning it in. You like realize that, no, man, nobody's phoning it in. Like everybody's really passionate about this show, which you think, you know, would not happen in especially like long running shows, you know? But you know, that's, and I get that energy, but again, like my sweet spot is just trying to do, you know, stuff that I want to watch, that I want to see, you know what I mean? Something that like, you know, and unfortunately, like, kind of like the last broadcast, but even, you know, worse, like there's been a lot of things that I've come up with and whatever. And I just, you know, I haven't moved on it quickly enough or whatever. And then a movie comes out, you're like, damn, that's really close to what I had in my head. And, you know, not that, you know, you couldn't still do it, but it just, you know, but again, you know, it's all about finding something new and pushing the envelope a little bit and, you know, you know, like I think I have a certain amount of talent, but I don't think I'm like, you know, you like exceptional, you know, like, you know, some of these like really freaking crazy filmmakers that are like geniuses, you know? So, you know, I have to work harder. So, you know, it's like something excites me, you know, that's kind of the only, that's the big thing for me. It's like the idea excite me you know, am I going to put 100% into it? Because without, you know, if I'm not going to put 100%, unless they're going to pay me a ton of money, I'm not, you know, it's like, it's not worth, you know, leaving my family and leaving my house to do
stuff
like that. So, but you know, but I've been so lucky and blessed that, you know, I turned the indie career and somehow, you know, moved into television you know, so, and I really do enjoy doing that. And now, like, because of television, I'm going back into features. Like, I have some stuff that's like, seems like it's going to happen this year. But you know, otherwise, you know, like I feel really fortunate that where I've ended up in my career, you know?
Well, and so thinking about what you had said a couple minutes ago of like, oh, I like De Palma, or oh, I love Star Wars, or, you know, like I was into something like Sam Raimi, and then applying that to like your filmography or even the way you guys work, like maybe you as an individual or like you with your team, I think all of that is there. Cause like De Palma was doing, oh, I like Hitchcock, but how do I make it more now? And then yeah. George Lucas is like the king of autistic people with money. And then, you know, like Sam Raimi, you know, like shaky cam, and then taking all of that and applying it to something like Blair Witch, you know, you can see the shaky cam from Sam Raimi. Okay. You can see the innovation of small things being used in a big way with like the little, the sticks, like for Blair Witch with something like Star Wars. And then that De Palma idea of someone I like, but doing it my own way with anyone inspiring you. And I think it's really cool that the idea of independent filmmaking continues to move forward, but then you get to see these people that, oh, I was inspired by so-and-so, and what are they doing now? And then you're working on a show like Yellow Jackets, where, you know, takes place in the late 90s, and then they're like, oh, we get to have one of the dudes that created one of the biggest things from the 90s here. Or a massive show like Supernatural, where that dude's just like, I just love being a fan of fucking everything. Like,
yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, and there's like, again, like there's a, you know, again, I've been really lucky to kind of get into these things and, you know, and, you know, it's like, you are always inspired by somebody, you know what I mean? Like, you know, like I think a lot of I was talking to somebody yesterday in an interview and I was connected like the Blair Witch marketing to like Star Wars marketing, you know,
yeah.
Not the original marketing, because, you know, even though they, you know, they, because that mostly what they did was merchandising, which was, you know, phenomenally successful.
Buy this box, you'll get toys in a year.
As you can see behind me. But, you know, but for me, there was a thing called Shadows of the Empire in mid 90s. And that was like, I just love the way they went everywhere, you know, and it wasn't even a movie. It was like multimedia. And that's really what, like, inspired us on Blair Witch. First of all, we didn't have any money, you know, obviously, so we did the website and kind of that was, but we definitely had this idea of like creating stuff outside of the movie, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. And I think that like that's really what kind of, you know, and you know, gets me going. And as far as like, you know, Supernatural and Yellow Jackets and stuff like that, like, you know, I feel really lucky to have been a part of those shows, and especially Supernatural, which was like, you know, I came in the last third of the run. We did, you know, the last 5 years, and you know, just such a family, and like they welcomed me in, and I was like just really intimidated, you know, by that show. You know, obviously, like you go in, you're like, Jesus, this is the 10th year they're bringing me in, like what am I gonna add? But as immediately they were like, oh, come on, you know, took me under their wing. And the two guys, you know, Jared and Jensen, very, very good guys. And so, you know, it was, and again, it was one of these things where like, I felt like, you know, early in my career, I felt like television was kind of like a step down, you know? But then somewhere in the early 2000s, like Sopranos came out, and like these really freaking, you know, big TV shows, like TV shows becoming, you know, actually probably more innovative than movies, you know? And, so I'm really happy, you know, I'm really glad that I made that transition, but yeah, man, I mean, for me, it's like, you know, there's just so much good material out there, and I love to like, you know, kind of go in and add my little, you know, my little pieces of inspiration to them, you know?
How are you guys feeling about like everything coming out right now with the Emerald Anvil stuff, and you guys are doing a podcast, and then there's what, a board game, NFT game,
there's a novel. That's, you know, that was something that Greg, my partner Greg, and actually, you know, we could do a whole, you know show about it, but he really he had this idea like a long time ago, and he's like really an amazing world builder. Like he was, you know, he was like a real Dungeons and Dragons guy early in his life. And I realized that like, that's really great world building, you know, like that's a good skill to like, it's a good game to develop your world building skills, obviously as a, you know, dungeon master or whatever. And I think you can kind of tie in a lot of like the D&D and Star Wars and, just all the things that inspired us as kids to like Greg's idea for Emerald Anvil. And for him, it was just like this thing of like, can we do something? Can we develop this huge world? And then kind of like Shadows of the Empire, not start with a TV show or a movie or, you know, just start with like kind of smaller things. Do more of like a Harry Potter thing if Harry Potter had like come out during like the internet age, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Harry Potter really, you know, blew up because of the novels. And our whole thing is that like, we're not like, we're not dependent on just one piece of media. Like we are not, we don't need the novel to be a, you know, New York Times bestseller. We don't need the podcast to go crazy. We don't need, you know, we just need a little bit kind of infiltrate each of those markets and kind of just become like make people aware of it. And then, you know, I mean, look, it would be great if one of the things became, you know, a huge hit or whatever, but our whole thing is just to kind of keep this, just keep it, you know, contained and keep it like within, you know, keep it under our control.
Mm-hmm.
That's the biggest thing is that like we could have gone and like built this world and then gone out and sold it. And, but you know, once you sell something, as we learn with Blair Witch, like you don't control it anymore 100%. And, there's sometimes you have great partners, but sometimes you have fights with partners and you have bad partners. and, you know, for us, I think for Greg mostly was like, I don't want to work so hard on this and then have it go in a direction that, you know, I'm not happy with or whatever, at least for the first part. So, you know, again, following George Lucas's kind of model, which, you know, the idea that like, oh my God, he controls the movies, you know, he controls the IP. So that's our thing is that, you know, eventually we would love to like kind of partner up with like a big, you know, company that like can do more, you know, huge budget things. We'd love to do a movie. We'd love to do a TV show, you know, a series of movies. We would want to do more novels. But for now, it's just like this really cool world that Greg created and brought me into. And it's basically trying to make fairies like cool and kind of dangerous. And like, it's a whole new take on fairies. You know what I mean? And again, like Greg's done he's done the great work of like tying something that, you know, like people, you know, 100 years ago, I mean, believed in fairies. Like that was just right. Something. It was like, oh yeah, they've seen fairies, and there was like those, you know, pictures of people with fairies, and it was kind of like Bigfoot before Bigfoot, you know, came out. You know what I mean? And I think Greg got inspired by that again, using like something that is real to build an IP that you're like that you can connect to something real. You know what I mean? Like with Blair Witch, we did it with like just the mythology or the folklore of like the Salem witch trials, and like the idea that like, you know, women were accused of witchcraft all over the place, and starting with that kernel of an idea and having this curse or whatever. And also just Bigfoot, like the idea of like, you know, something that some people have seen, but it still hasn't been documented, you know, officially. And then, you know, he just kind of took it to, you know, just went crazy and developed, you know, built this world called Hada. And even I, like now, like I'm looking, you know, that we release something new every day, like little piece of information. I'm like, why? I hadn't heard that.
Yeah.
I didn't, you know, and it's just, and we got some really great artists, great partners involved. So we're really excited about that, man. And, you know, we're slowly like kind of, you know, step by step kind of putting it out. But that's kind of exactly the kind of thing that we've been wanting to build for many years. And I feel, you know, I'm just glad, you know, Greg decided to kind of get into it and make it happen finally, you know?
Yeah. Well, and I, you know, like, Bloody Disgusting had posted that first piece about it the other day, and I sent it to Blade, and I was like, Ed had said something very briefly about this in our emails, but I didn't think it was going to be this big. And then I'm like reading the EPK and I'm just like, oh, there's this and there's this. And like, this is just 3 months of a business plan, like just for the first layout. I was like, this is insane. And I think that it's, it's great. And I think that, you know, it's seeing it done, and it's like a little bit different every time, you know, like with Blair Witch, you guys had like three documentaries, the book, and then like all that other stuff. And then when the Video Palace thing happened, you know, they built this beautiful thing, and to have Shudder be idiots and be like, oh, podcasts just aren't cool. And then have like a book instead. Like,
Yeah. I mean, you know, and I had very little to do with Video Pals. I was mostly sure. Mike Mello and Ben Rock. Yeah. But yeah, it comes from the same DNA. Like, we're all kind of, you know, very similar, you know, creative instincts. But yeah, man, I mean, because that's really like, you know, especially now with like just the social media, and there's so much clutter out there, mm-hmm. that it just helps to connect things. You know what I mean? It just helps. Yeah. Things. And we love doing that, and again, it gives you, you know, the coolest thing about, like, you know, doing IP, and I know, you know, like, and it excites me, like, about like Blair Witch especially, because, like, you know, there's the video games, and then there's a new video game, and then Adam and Simon's film, and like the now I went last month I went to Vegas, and I went to the Blair Witch escape room.
Oh, cool.
And yeah. It's just so amazing to like have like your original kind of kernel of an idea, like seeding all these things, and people like really talented people. Like the escape room is amazing, man.
Yeah.
It's like 10 rooms, and it's just horrifying. Like, it's just loud and like freaky, and oh my God. You know, and every, you know, so the idea of like, again, like having the kernel, the idea, and then having other people, bringing other artists, other collaborators in to like do this great work. And again, being surprised, like saying, yeah, go off and do this. And then you're like, oh my God, they send you the comps, and you're like, oh my God, that's so cool. I would have never thought of that. And that's really what's exciting for Greg and me, like having, you know, and again, Emerald Anvil will hopefully continue to be that, where like we continue to get, you know, talented people inspired by the idea and then kind of taking it in their own direction. And that's, you know, so that's kind of like, you know, the world building. The best world building happens once, you know, it gets so out there that people are creating fan fiction and,
yeah,
you know, and for me, that's kind of where I said the same thing with Emerald Anvil. Like, that's where we want to get to, where like, you know, Greg has plans for like things that like, actually bringing fan fiction into the canon. And, you know, he's really thought a lot of things through as far as like the different phases of how we're going to do this. And, you know, and we want to include people, you know what I'm saying? And
yeah.
That's, you know, it's a smart way to do it, you know, like, especially when you don't have a crazy amount of money, you can't like put billboards everywhere and commercials everywhere or whatever. You know, these kinds of things that we do, people kind of have to discover them, but I feel like that's kind of, a little, it's more rewarding when you discover it instead of something that's smashed into your face 10 times a day. You know what I mean? not that we would mind that, but you know,
sure.
those kinds of resources. But yeah, so you know, it's kind of what we do, and we're just really excited to get it, you know, out there.
Hell yeah.
And touching on the thing that you were talking about, like the kernel of the idea, mm-hmm. how does it feel that you in modern day can be watching an unassuming piece of media and just see an immediate either like a parody or a callback to your work with Blair Witch, or you can watch something and see an element of that in it and you can go, well, wow, I inspired this thing that I'm watching. Is that kind of a surreal feeling?
Yeah, man, all the time. You know, like when I was, you know, again, like we talked about like Star Wars and, you know, just those early, especially Star Wars, but just those early movies, you know, Raiders of the Lost Ark of Spielberg's and Jaws and Close Encounters and even 1941, you know, just that early stuff, like the idea that like, you know, that inspired me so much, and it inspired me to be a filmmaker, to be like an idea guy, and to like use my, you know, some of my natural abilities and push towards, you know, making, you know, media, multimedia films and television and stuff. And just the, you know, having that, you know, have it go full circle and have people, you know, again, like you see something, you're like, man, that's a lot like Blair Witch, or that's a lot like this, or that's like this scene or whatever. And then have people, you know, especially, you know, just it's not even like directors or writers. It's like crew people. Like, you know, everywhere I go, pretty much there's somebody who's like, man, you know, some, you know, younger person usually like, oh my God, I got into, you know, filmmaking because of you. And, you know, like you guys really like Blair Witch, like really kind of ignited my imagination and my interest in filmmaking and this and that. And, you know, that's it's such a blessing, man. Like, I feel so humble and so like honored to like be a part of that. You know what I mean? And, I never thought that I would inspire people to like, you know, even to get in to do anything, you know what I'm saying? So the idea that like, that, you know, we were part of somebody's development and somebody's, intro into the film business is just, you know, you can't, that's really the best thing about Blair Witch, you know, now is that, you know, the idea that like people are still inspired by it and you know, because they, you know, again, like originally, like what I always said is like the Blair Witch was kind of like this thing where you're like, hey man, these guys came out of nowhere and had no Hollywood contacts and had no money and just made this movie that was like this crazy thing all over the world. And, so it's like, you can do it. You know, you can do it too. You know, I mean, obviously you got to get lucky and, you know, it's one in a million, but it's like winning the lottery. You know what I mean? But somebody did it, you know, these guys, these knuckleheads from Orlando did it. So why couldn't I do it? And I think that's kind of the biggest thing for me is just like getting people to like, you know, inspiring people to do, you know, to live up to their potential and at least like, you know, create art, create stuff, even if it's not successful. Just the idea of like that we're inspiring people to create new things is mind boggling. You know what I'm saying? It's just very inspiring to me, you know, as a filmmaker.
So before Blade kind of goes off and asks all Blair Witch questions,
all right, well, you got me, but,
how do you like keep moving forward? Like, you know, like you, I think you are a very innovative person and you're part of a very innovative team. Like, what would be like your advice, I guess, like for people, like you just keep going every couple of years, you're doing something new.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like, I mean, look, I've been really lucky and a lot of the people, some of the people that I started out with are no longer in the business. A lot of, you know, yeah, I look back at the people that I went to film school with and, you know, like this business is really brutal and it's like very difficult to get in there and it's very rewarding, but it's just, you know, and even like just being on the set, like just set work is so brutal and the long hours and it takes a lot out of you. So it's very hard to have longevity in this business. You know what I mean? And I have just been so lucky and blessed that I'm still able to, you know, make a living doing these things. But I think the, you know, at least for me, like the best piece of advice that I give people is because you can't like, you know, you can't judge, you can't tell somebody just do this, this, and this, and you're going to succeed. Like,
sure. Yeah.
You know, there's a certain amount of talent that's involved, luck, you know, being in the right place at the right time. And then, you know, serendipity and like just, and to be a film, be on the film set, you have to like kind of work your ass off. You know, you have to, it's not an easy thing, you know, but, for me, like the number one rule is just like, be cool. Like be like, to me, like I think the biggest thing that I bring is that I have a certain amount of talent. I have a certain amount of vision, but also I get along with pretty much anybody. And, I don't have like a huge ego and I try to always kind of sustain, you know, keep my feet on the ground, you know what I'm saying? And I meet a lot of other people who are the same way. And you know, it's just, you're just better off being cool, being nice and being respectful, no matter who you're talking to. Like if it's somebody below you, like you don't need to demean somebody to like make yourself feel better. I've never felt that. I always have like a lot of sympathy and like I actually, you know, go beyond what like most people do just to make people comfortable, sometimes making myself uncomfortable, but I don't like, you know, making people feel bad. And that's just not, you know, who I am. And unfortunately this business does have a lot of those kinds of people. and but you see like that, you know, it doesn't work out for them eventually. Like there's just, you know, there's, you know, you just, it's just, you're just better off being nice and, you know, and be professional. So that's kind of my thing is like, you know, learn your craft and, you know, don't put too much pressure on yourself. Like, you know, not everybody can be like Christopher Nolan or Quentin Tarantino, you know what I mean? Just realize what you want to, you know, figure out what you want to do and realize and see what you're good at, what you're best at. And sometimes what you're better at is not what you really want to be good at, but there's, you know, that's one of the things that surprised me so much as a, when I started getting into the business is that like, you know, when you're young and even as in film school, like there's this whole attitude of like, you know, you got to be a filmmaker. You have to be a director. You have to be a writer. You know, every, you know, you go to a film school and like 95% of the people want to be, what do you want to be? Oh, I want to be a writer director. And it's like, well, chances are not all of you, very few of you are going to make it. If any of you guys are going to be to the point where you can make your own movies and write your own movies. But there are so many rewarding things to be discovered in filmmaking. And for me, like my biggest surprise was that like, you know, you feel like there's going to be like a lot of disgruntled people that aren't writer directors or that people that are jealous and, oh, I want to be the writer. But no, man, like I feel like especially when I work, there's so much people, there's so much love for the craft, no matter what they're doing, you know, like excitement. Like I see excitement in costume designers and DPs and, you know, prop masters and camera people who are like, just they, you can see like them setting up a shot and they just love it. They're just like, no, man, I'm right where I want to be. You know what I mean? And I feel that like, if I hadn't, you know, got lucked out and like gotten to the point where I was a, you know, could be a director and I, you know, have a career now as a director. Yeah. I'm just wondering like where would I have ended up? Because there's so many cool things, you know, like there's so many, like, again, it's like, you know, it's like a bunch of kids, you know, like all the time, you know, we look at each other like, and we're like, you know, we're talking about, okay, how much blood splatter would there be if this person is whatever. And you're like arguing and saying, yeah, a little more this and that, or, you know, like a skull position or just what kind of, you know, box is this guy carrying and how is it going to, you know, just these stupid, like, you know, things that are part of our jobs. And we, a lot of times, pretty much during every, you know, production, there's a moment where we look at each other. We're like, what the hell? We're getting paid to do this? You know, it's like, it's just like a bunch of kids making a movie, you know? And there's a lot of that. And I just, you know, like I always, you know, emphasize that. It's like, don't, you know, like, obviously I'm not trying to tell you not to be a writer director and to go for that. And you can always, you know, even if you're, there's so many people that are working on the set and they're also writing and directing their own thing and doing short films. Like, you don't have to stop that, doing that. But just remember that there is like, there's a big world out there, big creative world. And I feel like there's so much passion, you know, in every position, you know, even like, you know, grips, the people that are like just basically like, you know, most of the time just building things and carrying things and laying walk cable and wrapping cable, like, you know, that, like, I've had the greatest conversations with those people of all levels of like just like their passion for filmmaking. And, you know, sometimes sitting there with a grip and they say something, you're like, yeah, man, you know, yeah. And you get into this deep kind of talk with somebody. And it's just an amazing thing, man. And again, like, filmmaking is crazy because they take, you know, especially on set, they take so much advantage of you, you know, like, this business is brutal. It's like, it takes away so much of your personal life and people still love doing it. Like, there's still people waiting in line to be, you know, to get into this abusive, you know, relationship with your business. And that to me is, you know, again, so inspiring. And that's what I love mostly about television. It's just meeting, because the crew is the crew everywhere you go, man. You know, I've worked all, you know, Canada and Budapest and all over the United States. And the crew is the crew, man. You get to a point where you're like, it doesn't matter where I am. It's the crew is the crew. They're there and they're doing it, you know. It's just cool, man. And I never thought as a youngster, you know, like getting into filmmaking that 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 was the case. You know what I'm saying? I thought there was going to be a different situation, and I was really happily surprised that, that it is that way.
Was there ever a point like pre anything where you were just like, yeah, you know, I'd rather be a teacher, or, you know, I want to, like, you know, like, was there any job that you wanted to do that wasn't art related?
Well, I mean, early on, like, I wanted, I was like, before, like, you know, I realized that, like, you could be a, again, like the idea that, like, I took a filmmaker, I took a TV production class in 11th grade in high school. Mm-hmm. And the first day, and I took it just as like, oh, we'll have fun, whatever. You know, I've always been interested in filmmaking. You know, maybe it'll be an easy A or whatever. It'd be, you know, cool to do that. And the first day, the teacher said that, like, he was like, look, you know, there is writing and directing, and there's, you know, you think that the only people working in the business are, is Steven Spielberg, but there's a, you know, and he went through the list of all the positions and all the things. And that really, like, just kind of snapped, like really pushed a switch in my head, you know? And I was like, yeah, I'm going to be a filmmaker. And obviously I'm going to go to try to be a writer director because, you know, that's the fun of it, is just trying to create your own things.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I never shied away from, like, you know, what else can I be? Like, I love editing. Like, I think I would have probably ended up editing. So it's like, you know, there's so many DP. I love lighting things. I'm not really good at it. And I'm like in awe of like really good directors of photography that I work with. But, there's so many things out there. Once I decided to be a filmmaker when I was like 16, I never looked back. The only time I've looked back is when like, I'm really, like I went through a really depressing time when I was doing Lovely Molly. It was before I got on like medication for my depression. And I was really like, you know, I wrote that movie, I directed it, and I was editing it. And I was just like in this mode of like, Jesus, like, is this any good? And like, am I any good? And, you know, just really like a lot of self-doubt. And I remember going, you know, going to Target and like looking at the people, like just stocking shelves and going, man, it'd be nice to just come in and somebody tells you, all right, stock these shelves. Here's the boxes. Yeah. And just do that. Like not mindless work, you know, because there's rewarding work in any job, but just the idea that like, not like having so much, you know, really self respond, like, you know, you put so much response. I put so much responsibility on myself, and I was like so hard on myself. And that was a really difficult time. And I actually, that was right before I got into television. I really thought like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this anymore. I don't know if I'm going to be able to make another movie. Like I was just like, I got to try to figure out something else to do. So yeah, man, I mean, I think, and to me, and you know, there are times when you're just, even on set, you're like, you know, waiting around and, you know, some things haven't gone the way to, and you're like, man, this is not fun. This is not fun at all, you know? But again, like now at this point, like what else am I going to do other than start like a Star Wars museum? You know, I got no other skills, you know? So.
And I had a question about, you know, in your television career and everything. And this is like, you know, like a little bit right after Blair Witch area, but most of the like credit goes to Greg and is credited to Greg, but did you have any like deep involvement in Fearsome or Freaky Links?
No, man. And I wish I had, you know, that's like, cause you know, Dave Goyer was involved and, you know, Greg and him did a fucking great job. And, but you know, it was like, and again, like in my defense, that was like a different time in television. Like television still had a little bit of like, oh, if you can't make it in films, you go to television. Like it's had a little bit of that stink still.
Yeah.
And then in the, like I said, in the aughts and the, you know, the early 2000s, these really important kind of cool shows started popping up, and, you know, mostly on HBO. I think that was, they were kind of the beginning, you know, of like bringing respectability to television. And, so to me, not that it was beneath me, but I was like, no, I'm a film. I want to make movies, and you know, I don't want to. Television is just more of a distraction, and it's one of the things that I, you know, you don't want to go back in time and like think and you know be like all depressed because you didn't make certain decisions. But there are a few decisions where I'm like, yeah, I think we should have done that, and I think that like after Blair Witch, instead of jumping onto another movie, at least I should have like gone and said, yeah, I'm going to, cause they offered me like, they offered us like, hey, do you guys want to direct the pilot and you want to direct the, and I would, nah, I mean, you know, it was just like, nah, I wouldn't even think about it, you know? And I think looking back on it, I'm like, man, that would have been so cool. Because if I would have, I could have gotten into TV directing, I could have still made features, but I could have gotten into, I would have done like a bunch of Star Trek shows during that time. And like, there's so many cool shows from that time that I'm like, oh my God, I if I had like gotten into that stream, I would have had a chance to be, you know, to do episodes of, you know, Voyager and, you know, Enterprise, you know, all these, and, you know, and other shows like just, and you know, and unfortunately we didn't go down that road, but no, man, we gave notes and stuff on scripts and, you know, some of my ideas got in there, but that was just Greg and David, like just kind of pushing forward and fighting the executives, you know, and like,
yeah,
and again, like a shame because like, you know, like you, I love that you like know, you know, the original name, it was called Fearsome. That was the original name of the movie, the show. And, you know, and they came to us and they were like, we want, you know, the Blair Witch magic. We want you guys to push the envelope and this and that. And, you know, and I think that that's what David and Greg did. And they just, you know, and I saw this, you know, mostly from afar, from just watching my partner kind of get like, you know, hammered over and over again to like, make it more conventional, make it more commercial, you know, sand off the edges, you know, round off the edges, make it, you know, and I remember one, the last straw was like, for me at least, or like, I don't know, Greg, you know, it's a weird, you know, that's a whole other podcast, you know, to get Greg and David to talk about that. But I remember one of the executives saying, you know, we want it to be more like Scooby-Doo. And we're like, dudes, like, do you guys understand what you guys sold us on? Like, that this was, you tell me about, and I finally, you have the Scooby-Doo project
shirt on. Yeah, I want to get
love
that.
I love that. It's one of my favorite. I could never believe Scooby-Doo. I love Scooby-Doo, man. I mean, I love that shit as a kid, you know, and even now, like, I used to watch the episodes, just fun show, you know, and you know, and the horror show, like a horror cartoon, you know, like there weren't many horror cartoons back then, you know what I mean? But somehow they made it work. But to the idea of like going from like, yeah, we want to, you know, be cutting edge and we want to be crazy and like, you know, getting people's faces, and then go from that to Scooby-Doo, nothing against Scooby-Doo, but we were like, we don't, you know, yeah, there are elements of Scooby-Doo in it, but we don't want to be a Scooby-Doo, you know, show. So it was very disappointing. And especially for Greg, you know, like Greg put, you know, so much of his, you know, of his post Blair Witch energy into Freaky Links and it, you know, they just, it unfortunately, but it, you know, again, it has fans. Like, I think it's a cool show. Even like what ended up happening was cool. I think if they would have given us a chance to do what like David and Greg wanted to do, I think it would have been a huge hit. You know, because it was like not, it didn't pull any punches, you know what I mean? And it really truly was like a horror show. Like it was a scary, you know, the pilot was freaking creepy as hell, you know? So, you know, what are you going to do?
Yep. And the sad state of TV around then, I mean, Freaky Links, I didn't know Haxton was connected to it at all when it was airing. You know, I'm almost 30 now. So back when that was airing, I wasn't, you know, that old. So I had no idea.
You're young, man. Very young.
Yeah, and that was a show that like I remembered the name of for so many years, and through the advent of the internet getting bigger and bigger, I found people that remembered it too, because anybody I'd ask in real life, they were like, no, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
And then years later, somebody put it up on YouTube or something, and I was like, this is the show. This is the show that I remembered. And it's so cool to see it come back full circle that Haxton was involved with it and everything, because I spent years like, does anybody remember this? Am I crazy?
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm glad people, you know, discover it. And again, it's like one of those things where like, you know, it just didn't hit, you know, it just didn't work, and for a bunch of different reasons, but it did, you know, we were proud of it. And I know Greg is proud of it, you know, you know, it was, and again, it had a crazy web, you know, component to it. You know, we were, and, And for a, you know, I, honestly, when it came out, the website was more popular than the show, you know, and because there weren't many websites like that at that time, right after Blair Witch, you know what I mean? So, you know, unfortunate. I mean, you know, things like that happen, man. Sometimes you, you know, you're ahead of your time, or sometimes the, it just doesn't, the partners aren't right. And sometimes the studio messes things up, or, you know, and it's always usually a combination of things, but that was a real shame because we would have, again, a lot of mistakes made, you know, even me, like just, I should have gotten in there and like been more involved and, you know, and guided the show. And maybe they would have, maybe it would have turned out, you know, maybe with a little bit more of pushing from me, it would have, you know, they would have gone, you know, they would have taken, you know, gone in a different direction, or like let us, let Greg and David, you know, maybe if I would have been more of an advocate, you know, we would have gotten more of that original show, you know, on the air. But, you know, I was, I don't know, even though I know what I was doing, and it, you know, I was just, you know, not there.
You were watching Scooby-Doo, man. Come on.
I was watching Scooby-Doo, man. You know, and I was dealing with the, you know, post Blair Witch, you know, the aftermath of Blair Witch, man, where it was like, you know, Dan and I both were like, okay, now what?
Yeah.
Like, how do you follow up Blair Witch? And again, you know, like, do you want to, do you follow up Blair Witch by directing a television pilot at those, in those days? No.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, even like thinking about it, you know, like Twin Peaks, one of my favorite shows ever, you know, I love X-Files as well, but like David Lynch got fucked over by CBS, you know, like he, that wasn't what he wanted for season two. So the idea of them being like, yeah, like you're the Blair Witch guys, make it cool and scary. And then being like, well, no, dude, like, fuck you. It's our show now. Like that doesn't surprise me at all. And especially that example you gave of like pre-Sopranos, nothing ever got to be like that true, like, art from the artist. It was still the heavy involvement of a studio taking over.
I grew up with TV. Like, I love television. I never thought it was like a, you know, at least, you know, for me as a viewer, I never thought it was like a lesser thing.
Oh, sure, yeah.
You know, and there were so many great shows, you know, before the whole kind of Sopranos kind of thing happened. But again, it was, yeah, you're right. It was a different time. It was like, you know, like, you know, television was a little bit of a minor leagues to movies, you know, and not until, you know, recently has been now like, you know, television is right there on the same level as films. And sometimes even more, like, I think there's more important, you know, television things happening, and they take more chances on in television too. You know, there's like, you know, it seems like there's more innovation in television than there is in most of the, you know, the main movies that come out in, you know, from Hollywood.
Yeah. So going into something like Altered or Exists, or even like Lovely Molly, and then that idea of like the studio involvement, how typecast did you guys wind up being, you know, like 99 to 2002? Like, did you guys only get like these offers that were annoying, you know, were people actually trying to understand what you wanted to do as artists?
No, I mean, nobody tries to understand.
Cool.
I mean, you know, that's the whole thing, is that, like, you know, unless you have like a mentor, you have somebody that like can really guide you in the right direction. And also, you know, you have to listen to people, like, you know,
sure.
when we were, you know, I was like 30 years old when Blair Witch came out, I think. So
it would have been 25 years ago. So
yeah. And so I'm 55 now. So I was 30. So, you know, I mean, not to say that, you know, I know you guys are much younger than me, not to say 30 years old, you're a dumbass, but you know, you know, there's just a different level of experience, you know?
Sure.
And also ego, like, you're kind of like, oh, I'm the man or whatever. And
right.
I think all that kind of stuff came, you know, like, just was hard to handle after, you know, Blair Witch. But wait, what's the question, man? I always forget the,
that's okay, man. Yeah. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
It was like, did you guys get typecast?
Oh yeah, no, dude, man. I mean, everything was horror. Like, we got, you know, pretty much every like horror script that had kind of stalled. You know, our agents were like, hey, let's send it to these guys. And maybe, you know,
and here's Hellraiser 6. How do you make this?
I mean, like the, you know, the ones that I remember, were, you know, with the Exorcist prequel, we got offered that.
Okay.
And, but they were like, and, you know, we were like, oh my God, the Exorcist, that would be so cool. Yeah. And they, you know, and the, our agents were like, oh my God, they're going to give you guys so much money and this and that. And then we were like, we talked to them and we're like, you know, yeah, we love it, but, you know, we really, we need a few months to write, to rewrite the script. And we think, you know, that it has a lot of potential, but it's just not there yet. And they were like, no, 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 we're, you know, we're already in location, wherever they were, Morocco or whatever.
That, oh, wow. Yeah.
We're like a month away from shooting. You know, we just, we need you to come in. And I, and Dan and I were like, dude, they, you know, that would have been a freaking disaster. And, you know, you look at that movie, they made it twice and it was, you know, yeah. did it right twice, you know? and then another one that I really thought that, you know, and again, like I actually talked about this yesterday for the first time in a long time is, you know, that movie Joyride.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was, it was called Squelch when we read it, like, you know, the CB Squelch, because so much of the shit happens through the CB. And it was like a really good screen. It was, you know, J.J. Abrams before, you know, we knew who, you know, who he would become. And I loved that script, man. It was like kind of like a duel, you know, Spielberg duel kind of. And that's the only one I think that I, you know, and then again, like hindsight is 20/20, but, you know, there was like this kind of codependency going on between Dan and me at that time where like we were afraid to separate because there was this level of like safety with another person that you could like say, well, the movie sucked. You know, it's not all my fault. Dan was also involved, you know, at least for me. And I think he was the same way. And looking back on it, like we really should have just like separated. Like we should have said, hey, let's, you know, you go and make a movie by yourself and, you know, not by yourself, but, you know, we'll still help with the, you know, produce and scripts, you know, like notes and all that stuff, but let's separate and just make, you know, make a couple movies that we really want to make, you know, we were just not mature enough and not, at least for me, I wasn't brave enough to, and I would have, you know, again, looking back, I don't know. I'm like, you know, if I could have, if I would have just said, hey, yeah, I want to make Squelch. I want to get in on this. God, it could have totally happened. But again, there were, I was just afraid and, you know, it was just, and there's a couple of things like that, that were just like, just misses where you're like, maybe I should have, you know, we should have definitely done that. But again, you know, you look back on your decisions and there's always, you know, there's always things that you would do different, you know?
Sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's just absolutely the way it is. Yeah.
I was in a band for a couple of years and the dude that played bass, huge fan of Joyride, loved Steve Zahn. And there was like, we live in Akron and we're like 2 hours from Pittsburgh and he went to Pittsburgh for some baseball thing and they were doing like a That Thing You Do reunion. And he met Steve Zahn and he was like, dude, I love Joyride. And Steve Zahn was like, congratulations. Do you want to take this picture? Like, just didn't care at all. Like,
I thought the movie was good. I mean, I think that the script was even better because, you know, like they always like, you know, change things.
Of course.
Yeah. The ending was different than the script.
Yeah.
Man, it's just one of those situations where, you know, you just, you know, unfortunately you didn't get on board, you know?
Yeah.
Yep. And I've got a weird question as somebody who's like into archival stuff and like finding out original medium stuff like this. Do you have the Sundance cut of Blair Witch still?
Yes, I do. I have. We have it. Yeah, we have it. It's, and look, it's not that much different. You know, like we actually are doing. We're doing a special DVD right now that. Nobody's really announced it yet, but we've been talking about it, but we went back and, retransferred the movie from the tapes that Heather and Mike actually used for the first time since we first edited the movie. And I know like when you get really geeky into Blair Witch, but Blair Witch was shot on video and film, you know, and then we transferred that to vid, you know, we transferred the film to video and then we just put the video into a computer and we edited it on digitally. And then when it was time to go to Sundance, you know, we couldn't, this was before they, you know, did digital projection anywhere. And they were like, you got to make a print, you got to do a print to, you know, so we did a print and it cost more than the movie, you know, cost. And but there was a print, so everybody outside of like a couple of screens that we did in Florida and one in New York, the only way people seen the movie is through the projected version that we did at Sundance. And then when we went back, Artisan, we edited some stuff out, we edited some stuff in, and then they again transferred it to 35 millimeter of master. And then that's what got, you know, we struck the prints, and that's what was shown in the theater. And then when it came out to video, they didn't go back to our original video source. They just transferred the master negative to video. And that's why the film looks like, it doesn't look like a shot on video. It doesn't look like shot. It just looks like, you know, it's just very, I mean, it has a cool look, but so we retransferred the footage, and dude, I mean, Hi8 is not HD, but it's literally like, if I could show you like comparison, like it's literally going from like VHS to DVD. Like, remember back when we got DVD,
yeah,
like,
of course,
oh, man, you know, but so, and also they cut off, for some reason, they cut off like a little bit of the edges of the screen. So now we have like, not only like a new cut of the movie is coming out with like that, with the actual footage, you know, that the way it was meant to be seen, but we have, it's brighter, it's sharper, and it has more image. And then from that footage, Dan and I are going to do a bunch of deleted scenes. We're just going to go through the footage and like add, you know, hopefully a couple of hours of deleted scenes.
Well, and some of those like additional things, like Sticks and Stones, like I don't think there's anything other than a VHS release. So any of that footage would be.
Yeah. We haven't talked about that stuff. I mean, that stuff gets a little, I guess Lionsgate still owns it. That's a good idea, man. But yeah, I mean, there's so much stuff out there that like, you know, there's so much footage. So yeah, mm-hmm. So not only, you know, the Sundance cut is just, you know, I mean, I've shown it to people and, you know, it's like, kind of like, all right, I guess that was, you know, it's very, unless you really know this movie, like shot by shot, I can't even tell the difference really.
So
I think Blair Witch fans are going to love the idea of like being able to see more footage and just a clear, you know, looking video, like the clearest it's ever going to get. So we're very happy the way it's coming out right now.
That quite possibly could have been the coolest answer you could have given to that question—is that it still exists, right? And I'm going to get to see it eventually.
Yeah, no, it's cool, man. I mean, it's like it's what everybody's been waiting for, and we had like a 2.5 hour version that I think we could have, you know, released, but we can't find it. We don't. I mean, I know we could like. We were doing Media 100 back then, like the non-linear editing system. So we'd have to go back to that system and then it would be a nightmare. So, but we just, you know, we were back then, we were so poor that we would just dub over the tapes, you know, that we would use, we would, you know, output the movie and then show it and then reuse the tapes. You know, those Beta SP tapes were expensive, man. So unfortunately that it's gone, but the 2.5 hour version cut. But there's I found a VHS of the Sundance cut just a couple of years ago, so I have it here.
And then I got a couple weird questions. Of all the parodies, have you watched all of them, or is there just some you were like, man, I don't want to watch the Blair Thumb Project? Like, that's
no, I mean, there's no way to see all the parodies. Like, you know, I've seen like the major ones, and I think the ones that are like the Scooby-Doo one is like very popular, and of course, like the stuff they did in Scream. And but I mean, you understand, like when we started right after Blair Witch, like our offices, we would get like, you know, 10 or 15 VHS tapes every week with parodies. Oh, wow. You know, and like we had like a stat, and I guess we threw those away, but we had like a huge mountain of because that was before DVDs really kind of caught on, like when you could do them at home. It was all VHS. But we, you know, the Blair Mall Project, and which these guys were like stuck, you know, outside a mall, and they discovered the mall and they went in, and, you know, every conceivable, you know, parody that, you know, and, you know, after a while, you're like, you know, you watch a few of them and you're like, all right, you know, what are you going to do? I mean, you can't spend your life watching them. But, you know, it was so cool though, man, to be able to like, because again, I never thought that my movie was going to be parodied or a movie of mine would be parodied, you know, because that's, you know, you've made it when people are making fun of you, you know what I mean?
Were you guys involved?
That was really cool. No,
were you guys ever involved with the Scooby-Doo project, or were they just like, hey,
No, man. We weren't involved with any of the parodies. That was just a, you know, like, and again, it wasn't like a video parody, but it was like, my favorite is the Mad Magazine parody, because it's like, you know, I grew up with Mad Magazine and, you know, cracked and crazy. And, you know, I remember like going to this, you know, seeing the Mad Magazine and seeing that they had a stick man on there, like, we roast the Blair Witch Project or something. It's the cover. I'm like, oh my God. And then opening it up and seeing that, like, because, you know, we were kind of like the poster children, the poster child for me. Dan and I were like the poster children for the movie, because they couldn't really highlight the actors because, you know, they were supposed to be dead. So we got a lot of all the early kind of press. So it became this story of like, oh, these two guys came out of nowhere. So we were actually in the damn parody. And I never thought I would see myself, you know, drawn out in Mad Magazine, you know what I'm saying? So it was one of those like, holy shit, man, we've arrived. You know what I'm saying?
Yep. And I promise this is my last Blair Witch question, because you answered my restoration question about the Sundance cut too. Those McFarlane Movie Maniacs figures, do you consider those like definitive, this is what the Blair Witch looks like, or just somebody's interpretation?
I mean, you know, there is no, definitive Blair Witch. Like, you know, to me, it's like, I don't even know what the Blair Witch looks like. And I think that like the thing that is the Blair Witch, you know, which existed before it was called the Blair Witch, because the Native Americans, you know, knew about this thing for like a long time before the Europeans got here. Everybody has its own, like it manifests itself differently to everybody, to each person. So I think that like the McFarlane versions are really cool, and like they're totally make sense to me. And yeah, I think eventually in one, if you really want to connect the dots, yeah, that's the way it appeared. That appeared that way to somebody in the myth, you know, in the folklore of the movie. But there's no definitive, you know, looking Blair Witch. I think it's like, you know, like if you look at the mythology, just different people see different things, and you see what like Mary Brown saw, you know, it was different than what, you know, I think what Rustin Parr saw, and to get really geeky, you know what I mean, into the folklore and the mythology. So, you know, it's kind of that, you know, it's a malevolent entity that likes to fuck with people. That's all. That's the only really rule. And it's for some reason it lives in that area, you know?
Thank you for answering that. And now you did a short for a film called VHS 2. It's Ride in the Park. Were you guys approached by them, or were they taking open acceptance? How did that come together? How did Ride in the Park come to be?
The VHS 1 was a huge hit, and you know, and it was the, you know, and we loved it. And then we were at South by Southwest with lovely Molly, I think. And, you know, the guys, Brad, Miska, and, you know, some of the other producers were there, and we were like, oh my God, we love the VHS. And then they were like, do you guys want to be a part of the second one? And, you know, it was just as easy as that, man. And it was a little, you know, intimidating, because we were like, you know, they're just asking us because we're the Blair Witch guys, you know?
Right.
And like, okay, now we want to do it, but we won't, you know, we don't want to make the worst film in the anthology. You know, you want to support everybody else, and you want to make cool movies, but at the same time, you know, you don't want to be the worst one, you know, or one that, you know, disappoints people. And, so there was a lot of pressure, but, you know, we loved working with those guys, and then meeting the other filmmakers, and it's such a great, it's such a cool thing to like have people, you know, again, we talked about it earlier, like taking your idea, your kind of the seed of your idea, and then like, what do they come up with? You know, and I love like just like taking found footage and like, you know, updating it, you know what I'm saying? Doing something completely different than what we did. And that's what I was, you know, was cool. It's just seeing everybody kind of come up with this vision of, you know, of what found footage, you know, and that was cool. What's cool about the first one is just like the evolution of found footage, you know, like where has it gone, you know, and that was as cutting edge as you could get. So, hey guys, I got maybe like one more, two, I gotta go soon. I have another interview and I gotta take a shower and stuff. And, you know, I haven't showered.
I understand. Yeah. So where do you want people to find you? For like, you know, social media or website, you know, this, that, the other.
The best place to find me, like, you know, I'm on, you know, X or Twitter or whatever, Sanchez on the mic. Same at Instagram, Graham Sanchez on the mic. And then on Facebook, there's a page called Hacks and Films. It's a group. There's a page and a group, and the group is the one that I mostly update daily, but that's really like kind of the hub of, you know, if you want to find out what I'm up to and what Greg is up to and, you know, just kind of what we've been doing. So, that's basically those two places or three places that kind of, that's where people can find me.
Awesome. Well, thank you again for doing this. I really appreciate it, dude.
Yeah, man. Sorry I had to cut it off. It was, I could keep talking all day with you guys.
Well, I know you and I had talked about doing another one with Greg to do like further promo for stuff. And I think that would be great. So we'll figure that out.
Let us know. Cause I mean, if you want to do it like soon,